Well, Miss Victoria Grant, I want to welcome you to Access Cleveland and thank you so much for taking out the time and talking about this very important topic because, of course, October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month.
Yes.
And we want to make sure that we get all the information that we can out to the public so that someone who may be going through this can know where to look for help and also can know what warning signs to look out for. But before we get into that, tell us a little bit more about Domestic Violence and Child Advocacy Center.
Thank you for having me. The Domestic Violence and Child Advocacy Center actually is a merger of two former agencies. We officially merged this year, July 1st, 2012. Mm-hmm. We were formerly known as the Domestic Violence Center, mm-hmm. and the agency that we merged with was Bellflower mm-hmm. Center for Prevention of Child Abuse. Mm-hmm. And so the funders and the community says, hey, you guys are kind of doing the same thing.
Right.
One focuses on child abuse, the other focuses on domestic violence.
Right.
And therefore, the merger was made. It is a very exciting opportunity for mm-hmm. us to not only deal with the issue of domestic violence,
right.
but to deal with the issue of child abuse and to kind of take a look at providing services to the family holistically.
Absolutely. So for someone who may be going through a domestic violence situation, or someone who may be in a situation and not know that it's maybe getting to the point of being in an abusive situation, what are some of the warning signs that they should look out for?
Well, one of the warning signs that we look out for is controlling behavior. Mm. The one thing I like to say is I facilitate domestic violence classes within the community is mm-hmm. that unfortunately batterers, perpetrators don't wear a t-shirt.
Right.
So in the beginning, they're very charming, they're mm-hmm. very charismatic, but that controlling behavior, mm-hmm. that jealousy, sometimes I think we in relationships tend to misunderstand what
right.
jealousy is, and
right.
jealousy mm-hmm. is certainly a sign that you probably could be in a potential abusive relationship.
Right.
Someone who wants to quickly isolate you from your support systems, your family, and your friends. That's one of the things that the perpetrator likes to do most is to isolate you and to kind of erode your support system. So
right.
jealousy, isolation,
right.
controlling behaviors, put downs, mm-hmm. you know, in healthy relationships, there's arguments.
Right.
But you know what? There's a way to argue healthily,
mm-hmm.
if that's a word.
And right.
So in an unhealthy relationship, what a perpetrator will do with name calling, put downs,
mm-hmm.
Might even have that intimidation and
mm-hmm.
threats. So
right.
those are some of the things that you might want to look for.
Okay.
In a partner.
Now, for those who have gotten to the point where they know for a fact that they are in an abusive situation, how can they get help?
Well, I'd like to give our hotline number, which mm-hmm. is 24 hours, and it's staffed by a domestic violence advocate, and that number is 216-391-HELP, which is 216-391-4357.
Mm-hmm.
It is an anonymous confidential number,
mm-hmm.
and we have it staffed by advocates that can do a safety planning, point you to community resources. We have a shelter available for women and children that are
mm-hmm.
fleeing abusive relationships. We have a lot of services available, so we would ask them to contact that hotline number,
mm-hmm.
or they could contact me, and my direct line is 216-229-2420.
Okay.
One of the first things that we would probably do with that survivor
right.
is safety planning. Safety planning is very important.
Mm-hmm.
Someone looking to leave an abusive relationship, there's a statistic that says once that survivor leaves, her chances of becoming murdered increases by 75%.
Wow.
So safety planning is really important
yeah.
when a survivor wants to leave that abusive relationship.
Mm, wow. Yeah, and that's a very scary situation. So as you said, that safety planning is something that's absolutely necessary. So, okay, if you're a single mother and you have kids, or if you're married and you're in a relationship that's abusive and you have children, let's talk about how this affects the kids.
Yeah, domestic violence in the home, children who grew up in home where they witnessed domestic violence has a severe impact.
Mm-hmm.
There's a statistic that says little boys who grew up in homes where they witnessed intimate partner violence
mm-hmm.
are 700 times more likely to become abusers.
That's amazing.
It
wow.
is amazing.
Wow.
Now, is that statistic the same for a female? Unfortunately, I couldn't find any statistics,
mm-hmm.
but I like to put it in this context. If a child grows up in a home where they witness domestic violence, they are, because they're exposed,
mm-hmm.
they're at greater risk. It's like if I came in here for this interview
mm-hmm.
and I had a cold,
right.
you're at risk for
right.
getting that cold.
Right.
Doesn't necessarily mean you'll get it,
right.
but your risk is greater. It's the same thing with children who grow up in homes where they witness domestic violence. It just depends on which end of the pendulum they decide to take.
Mm-hmm.
like. Mm-hmm. For instance, a female who grows up at home where they witness domestic violence can actually be a perpetrator later on in life in their relationships. Mm-hmm. A male who witnessed that domestic violence might take the pendulum of being a victim.
Right.
The impact is very severe. Children, there's some behavioral, there's some cognitive, there's some physical effects of growing up in homes where you witness domestic violence. Mm-hmm. And I actually like to say, because I do actually facilitate an entire class mm-hmm. on the impact of domestic violence on children, it actually starts in the womb. Starts in the room.
Wow.
If a woman is pregnant mm-hmm. and she's in an abusive relationship, mm-hmm. and let me just say, a woman who's pregnant in an abusive relationship, that physical violence, that chances of that physical violence increases. One or two things will happen. Mm-hmm. If there's no physical violence when she's pregnant, mm-hmm. the physical violence will start. Mm-hmm. If there is physical violence, that physical violence will start to increase. So even in utero, mm-hmm. that child is impacted by that domestic violence.
Wow.
Psychologically, they constantly live in fear.
Mm-hmm.
They're traumatized by the domestic violence. Mm-hmm. They have trouble sleeping. They have trouble maintaining healthy boundaries. Mm-hmm. They're in fear that, you know, either mom or dad, you know, might not make it through this one.
Right.
Their social skills are very limited mm-hmm. because of the domestic violence. So there's a whole lot of things that goes on with children
right.
when they grow up in homes.
Wow. And you know what, to piggyback off of your earlier point, you mentioned how if young girls grow up in a domestic violence household, that they could eventually become perpetrators. Let's talk about something that may be a little bit taboo, something that we don't really hear a lot about, is men.
Absolutely.
Who are in domestic violence situations, who are, you know, who don't want to put their hands on a woman, and but their mate is, you know, putting their hands on him. So what do you have any programs in place for men who are in a domestic violence situation?
Unfortunately, at this point, we don't have mm-hmm. any programs per se, but mm-hmm. I have worked with male victims.
Mm-hmm.
And a victim is a victim, regardless of gender.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing I do want to say about males is that, unfortunately, they don't disclose as much as females
right.
victims because of that stigma
exactly.
of that masculinity
right.
and being a male and having to disclose that they are victims of domestic violence.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't get a lot of calls for mm-hmm. men's, but we're taking a look at this as an agency to be able to provide services for males because we do recognize that males are victims.
Yeah.
I would like to say that their victimization probably is more psychological and
mm-hmm,
emotional.
Mm-hmm.
There is some physical with mm-hmm. male victims, but there's more psychological, financial, and emotional.
Right. Now, let's talk about what I would call the end game, when we actually find out, identify the abuser, whether it be male or female, and not only have we gotten help for the victim, is there help available and is rehabilitation possible for the perpetrator?
Rehabilitation is possible for mm-hmm. anyone who recognizes, and that's the key issue.
Right.
First of all, you need to recognize that there's an issue. I think the Cleveland courts have something called the DIET program,
mm-hmm.
but that program is for perpetrators that have been found guilty
okay.
of domestic violence. And I kind of link it with the same way with a person who has substance abuse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I always put it in these terms. If you're in a court, a drug court, and the judge say door number one, treatment, or door
right.
number two, jail.
Yeah, you're going to choose treatment.
You're going to
yeah.
do treatment.
Right.
And so
mm-hmm.
therefore, are you really recognizing that you have an issue? It's the same way with male perpetrators. We at one time did a batterer intervention program, and Timothy Bayline was the director of that program. And just in talking with my colleague, he said that the success rate is 3%.
Oh, wow.
3%. It's an ingrained, you know, violence is a learned behavior.
Right.
And anything that's learned can certainly be unlearned.
Right.
And there's a lot of factors and a lot of dynamics that go into getting that perpetrator to change that behavior.
Mm-hmm.
But I do believe that it can be done,
mm-hmm.
but it takes a lot of intensive therapy,
right.
a lot of work, a lot of accountability,
mm-hmm.
making the perpetrator accountable mm-hmm. for the behavior.
Mm-hmm.
So I do believe that if the perpetrator wants to be rehabilitated, learn new skills and
mm-hmm.
new tools,
mm-hmm.
that it's possible.
Right, right. Now, you're Ms. Grant, you're the coordinator of the UJMA program at the DVCAC. Tell us a little bit about the UJMA program.
The UJMA program was started in 2007.
Mm-hmm.
It is one of two culturally specific programs that we have at the agency. My program is geared towards the African-American community
mm-hmm.
to build capacity within a community. community and to raise awareness around this issue. Mm-hmm. It was started because it was part of our strategic plan. At one time, we had 3 shelters. 2 were located in the inner city, but because of funding, we had to close them. Yeah. And so we recognized that there would be gaps in services for the African-American community. Mm-hmm. We also recognized that women of color mm-hmm. have different barriers when accessing services because it has to do with culture and a whole lot of different dynamics.
Right.
Sometimes they don't trust mainstream service providers.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So what we do is we go out into the community. One of the things that we do that I'm really excited about is that we train the African-American church mm-hmm. around the issue of domestic violence.
Okay.
Because we recognize that, you know what, that African-American woman or that woman of color might not come to me.
Right.
Her faith community might be the first place that she turns to. So I felt that it was imperative to have the church trained around this issue mm-hmm. and to address this issue. So we do 2 things. We train churches on to start a domestic violence ministry mm-hmm. within their congregation or a domestic violence support group, mm-hmm. or we train key leaders on how to provide information and resources for victims that might be presenting. The other thing that we did is we partnered with the Attorney General's office in 2010, mm-hmm. and we did something called Cut It Out. Mm-hmm. And what we did was we trained African-American hairstylists, I have a hard time saying that, around the issue of domestic violence, because we know that that's a community within itself. And if a victim gets in that chair, she gets comfortable, and she might share some information with her stylist that she might not share with anyone else. Mm-hmm. So we did a whole day training. They were able to get CEUs, and we gave them goodie bags with resources and information that they could put in their shops. Mm-hmm. And that was a very successful training. The second thing that we do is we provide services, direct services for survivors of domestic violence. Mm-hmm. We provide them with court advocacy, community referrals, whatever we're able to do, we do that. We also provide professional trainings to mm-hmm. law enforcement, mm-hmm. healthcare professionals, social service agency. So my philosophy, my vision for the UGMA program is to get our community engaged, to get us to talking about this, because you know, we don't talk about this issue, mm-hmm. and to have gatekeepers within the African American community, because you know, I can't be everywhere.
Right.
So if I get the message here in the Mount Pleasant area, and mm-hmm. there's gatekeepers in Mount Pleasant, if there's gatekeepers in East Cleveland and Fairfax areas, if that victim presents in that community, they'll have a place where they can go to get information and resources.
Absolutely. So one more time before we go, for someone looking for help, for someone who's looking for advice, how can they get in touch with you in order to get that help?
My telephone number, once again, is 216-229-2420. Mm-hmm. That's my direct line. If you need immediate emergency services, I would advise you to call our hotline, which is 216-391-4357. Let me just say, all my services are free and they're mm-hmm. confidential.
Absolutely. Well, Victoria Grant, coordinator of the UGMA program at the Domestic Violence and Child Advocacy Center, I want to thank you so much for your time and joining us today.
And thank you for having me.